Right. Normally, when have a guest on the program, we usually are able to link up right away. That would not happen with a Malachy McCourt. Are you there, Malachy McCourt?
Yes, I am indeed, Adrian. We had a little phone difficulty, but Anya straightened it out pretty quickly, so yeah. Here I am. And what do you want?
I gave you a very flourishing introduction. As I normally do. And if you think
of course
that,
you do, yes.
And, you know, there's a little part of me that says, you know, maybe he was sitting back and, you know, absorbing all of this. And maybe he's been a bit on the cute side, pretending that he doesn't hear this, so that I might have to do it again.
Ah, yes, indeed. Keep it going, Adrian. Because it's lovely to hear your obituary while you're alive. I highly recommend it.
Listen, let's talk, first of all, before we get to your newest book, which, congratulations, heading for the bestseller list already, Death Need Not Be Fatal. But I want to back up to, to a period. Let's get past Limerick, but I want you to start somewhere around the time that you decided that being a bar owner and a bartender and, that this was very appropriate, you know, coming from the family you came from, that this was your vocation.
That what was my vocation?
To be in the pub business, to be in the
bar. On the pub business, yeah. Well, that was accidental, Adrian. I was, as you know, I have no qualifications for anything, really, because I left school. I packed it in when I was about 13 because I was so bloody stupid. I couldn't get anything they were talking about. So I failed that exam, you know, which you used to have there.
Yeah.
The primary that every kid took at over the age of 12. So, and you had to be really way down in the intellectual department to fail that. But I did. So anyway, I snuck out and somehow or another escaped the mooching guard, as we called him. And I got a job as a messenger boy. And then, you know, I had all kinds of jobs. Ever since, I have never gone back to work. But back to school, I mean. And I've never worked either because I don't believe in it. That's, you know, work is punishment for sin. And I didn't do it. Adam and Eve did it. So that's not my business. They can do what they want to pay for their sins. But I'm responsible only for my own. And no gallons of water will wash mine away.
Right.
But anyway, there we are.
So yeah, anyway, Malachy, I just want to set the record straight for our listeners. There is no way, there isn't a bone in my body that would try to explain the humor of Malachy McCourt, because as outrageous as he is now, he has this tendency to get better and more outrageous. And
yes.
If I had to count the number of times that he was contributing so greatly to have us thrown off the air.
Yes.
Survival. I know about survival. We survived that, and we're still standing. A bit wobbly, but we're still standing. But I would like to let our listeners know that it was only with a petition, which was signed by hundreds of listeners, that we were able to get you off our program, lest we would wind up like you did in getting fired off, major radio stations.
Oh, yeah. I was fired from WMCA after 6 years. And then, of course, I went on to WOR, and I was on ABC. And, of course, many times they wouldn't hire me at all. They would put me on a trial basis, and all I could hear from the executive suites was, oh, my God, what's he doing on our airwaves? That was what they would say. And then, of course, you, with your bad memory, would forget all the terrible things I'd said and done, and you would invite me back, and then you would remember, oh, my God, we had to get rid of him before, but now what are we going to do? And, of course, being the courteous, lovely, hospitable fellow that you are in the Irish tradition, you never did heave me off in the middle of a program, but you would say to Anya afterwards, cross his name off the list. Don't get him back here again, because we're not going. The FCC is not going to put up with it. But here we are, Adrian, again, and your memory has failed you again, and here I am.
We had great times and great fun on radio.
We did with Michael Scanlon, our good friend Michael there, and
Michael
and a whole bunch of other people, and. It's been the radio is such a great and intimate medium. In all seriousness, I just love it. And now you've got some kind of a Guinness record here, Adrian, for the number of years you have been doing the program. How many years is it?
47.
So we're heading up to the half century.
But you know, unlike you, I am actually, and I've always been seriously looking for a job. You haven't. And,
of course not.
Yeah.
And, I told you work is punishment for sin. I mean, just all because they ate an apple, they get tossed out, and Adam is condemned to earn his bread by the sweat of his brow. Come off it, God. Don't leave me out of it.
Yeah, but
that's what I say.
Malachi, if you're going to have even a pleasant conversation, much less an argument with God, could you try to maybe go over to BAI, WBAI, where you're more at home anyway?
Yes, I do that on Wednesday morning from 10 to noon. I, as you know, Adrian, I am an atheist, thank God.
Yeah.
And that keeps me out of any arguments with non-existent deities.
None.
And if they do exist, then I'm going to go to a place that needs, I think there's a guy in the White House now who should go to this place and make it great again. And it's, do you know that James Joyce, let's see now what he said about this place. It's called Hell. And he said, it's a place where the blood seethes and boils in the veins. The brains are boiling in the skull. The bowels a red-hot mass of burning pulp, the tender eyes flaming like molten balls. And then it's placed where some foul and putrid corpse that has lain rotting and decomposing in the grave, a jelly-like mass of liquid corruption. Imagine such a corpse a prey to flames devoured by the fire of burning brimstone and giving off dense, choking fumes of nauseous, loathsome decomposition. And then imagine this sickening stench multiplied a million and a million times again from the millions upon millions of fetid carcasses that are lying rotting in the grave, a huge and rotting human fungus. Imagine all this, and you'll have some idea of the horror of the stench of hell. Now, there's a place that needs your man in the White House to make great again. So, because all the liberals are there, you see. Mm. So, it is a place that... Now, I'm not sure I want to go there because of the, you know, it's not very comfortable. But anyway, I have that in the book now. Yeah. Death need not be fatal.
Yeah, there are very few, if any, who would pick up a pen to actually write about about death and particularly since it's not that far away. Fortunately, I'm a decade younger than you, so I don't have to worry about it. But having said that,
Thank you, Adrian. You're extremely kind.
Yeah, I know. We, you know.
Adrian, my doctor said, look, if you eat right, if you do a bit of exercise, if you don't drink, if you don't smoke, and if you kind of get enough sleep, you will die healthy. So that's me. And I'm 80, going on, I'll be 86 this month, and I could drop dead at any moment. How many people are going to die here? You know, people don't die here, Adrian.
Yeah.
They're so afraid to. It's like it's contagious. Oh, you know, it's like somebody has some sort of a disease like syphilis. They say, oh, he passed away. He's gone. He's no longer with us. He's with the Lord. He's at peace. He's at rest in the arms of God with the angels. Passed away. Passed what? And who's going to clean it up? And you can't do it on the highway. It says no passing. And so on. So this is what my book is all about. How wonderful. You know, in Ireland, of course, as you know, when you get to my age, you're in the departure lounge. And that's where I am at the moment. So I don't know. All the brothers are dead. The parents are dead. And we know, you and myself, even though you're younger than me, are all our friends are kicking off by the... There's hardly any of us left. I don't know how you're alive, but anyway, with the things you've done and said in your life, but anyway, we...
Well,
we
I'm not rushing you or anything, but you're off my Christmas card list, and that has got nothing to do with my, you know, predictions or my great respect for you.
Oh, I see, because you think I'm going to live till Christmas.
No, as a matter
and you're
fact,
not going to send me a card.
Our mutual friend, Michael Scanlon, who indeed is having great success with his own book, the...
Oh, lovely. That is a really terrific little book, and a family saga that's so well written, and it's so reminiscent of what would have called the good times with his mother and father and parties and moving the furniture and having the dance in the living room and all that. It was great. Yeah. Very nice.
It's called Rolling Up the Rug. And it's available on Amazon. But anyway, Michael and I actually had a very serious conversation the other day, and we have it figured out. Between, you know, Mike, yourself, and myself, we have a plan that we're going to leave in chronological order in reverse. And you're up
really?
And you're up first. Okay.
Well, by coincidence, I'll be reading in Greenwood Cemetery at 6:30 on September the 12th. There's a literary gathering. Believe it, isn't that funny? In Brooklyn, Greenwood Cemetery, 6:30.
Yeah.
And also, I'm giving it, would you believe this? I'm going to give the sermon at the Ethical Cultural Society on September 24th at 11 a.m. Can you imagine that? And so there you are. So we are assuming that I will be still alive.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Alfie died suddenly there last year. He lay down for a nap, and off he went. And Brother Mike went the year before, and Frank went about 8 years ago. And then the other three, the two twins, they died at 4, and my sister was only a few months old when she died. And I'm the last McCourt standing, so... But at the moment, I'm sitting because I do that. I mean,
you're an orphan. Let's just.
I am the oldest orphan in the world at this moment. And no matter how, you're never too old to be an orphan. Yeah. Right? Once your parents go, you're in the front line. As Pete Hamill says, when your siblings start to die, then he says, they're shooting at my regiment now. But isn't it amazing though, Adrian, how people do not ever mention the word death here?
Yeah.
It is all full of euphemisms, and they say it with hushed tones. And you know what I can't stand is the platitudes. Did you get the guys like Trump and all these sending these messages? Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Your thoughts and prayers? Who gives a damn about your thoughts and prayers? Send money. That's what people need when somebody dies. Bloody funerals now cost $10,000, $12,000. And what people need is money. How does anybody... When somebody says, my thoughts and prayers are with you. Mm. Oh, I think I'll have that hamburger well done. That's the next thought. People don't give a bloody hoot about your thoughts and your prayers. How do I know how about your thoughts and prayers? Or anybody's, you know. Anyway, it's all bloody stupid.
Yeah, but
death is stupid. And I think the first thing that Congress should do is outlaw death. Stop all this thing about taxes. Get rid of death, and then we can talk. And read my book.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it is.
Read your book, yeah. My thoughts and prayers are with you. Listen, I in approaching, there is an image, and those who go to Amazon or go to a book store and want to get your latest book, that image of you lying in the coffin with a big crap-eating grin on your face.
Well, we rented a coffin up in Rhinebeck, and we got the photographer, the undertaker brought the coffin over. And, of course, I had to get into it. And he had his teenage son with him. So he's this kid. He's about 16. And I got him laughing anyway. He said, I've never had so much fun. Well, I'm the first live corpse your family has ever had in their coffin.
Yeah.
But anyway, see, I love that picture. It is.
Yeah.
And to get into a coffin is... and if, you know, when I wake up in the morning, Adrian, and I see the ceiling, I know I can get up. But if there's a coffin within 3 inches of my nose, I know there's no point in getting up. I'm gone, finished, over, done with.
So
and
then
I know.
What are you grinning for then? I mean, shouldn't you have been at least join your hands or get a hold of a rosary beads or something?
Because it's eternal sleep. That's all it is. There's no hell. There's no heaven. Can you imagine that what heaven is? Sitting at the right hand of a daisy like a mafia chief, and you have to look at his earlobe for all eternity.
Listen.
Then, of course, you have to look left if you're looking at God, because if you're sitting on the right, you have to look left. And on the other side of him, on the left-hand side of God, is me and Karl Marx, you see, and all the other commies.
You know,
you have to put up with that for eternity.
But now that they have downplayed limbo...
You
better watch your mouth, because I have a feeling that you would actually be quite comfortable in limbo.
Well, that's what death is all about. You just go to sleep and that's it. I mean, what are people worried about? And if you don't, you know, they want you, you have to obey. If you don't do what this guy says, you're out. And the mafia, you know, organized religion has all the elements of organized crime. Except the compassion of organized crime. I mean, the mafia will just shoot you in the leg if you don't pay up, whereas organized religion sends you into a place that's burning coals and they're shoving red hot pokers up your armpits and murder and fire and brimstone stinks and loads of, and as Joyce said, you can't even remove a fly or an insect that's gnawing at your eyelids. You can't move, nothing. You can't scratch yourself if you're itchy, nothing. It's really a very awful place. And that is not just for one day, but that's forever. Mm. And that's what we were terrorizing. It was ecclesiastical terrorism.
I have to say, though, it did stand to you because, you know, You come across as somebody who was really touched by fear. You can find it in your voice. you know, fear and respect for, you know, the next life. Listen, mister, I want to ask you about thoughts approaching death. And
yes,
I think it probably would be a very good time, taking all of your joshing and putting it aside for a moment. The time of reflection is something that we all kind of hear. You know, they say in the last seconds of your life, you reflect on your entire life and any, you know, mortal sins that you've ever come rolling out. You have to add to that sacrilege, you know?
Yes. Well, that's what they call it.
Yes.
I just call it common sense. Here's the thing I have, Adrian, is that Oscar Wilde said, forgive your enemies, it annoys them. So that's my first thing, is I'm forgiving anybody who is my enemy, and including you. No, you're not my enemy. You've always been my closet friend. You just will not admit to being my friend because you're very respectable.
It depends on
all of that. You know, the Jews have a disease called Tay-Sachs. The blacks have a disease called sickle cell anemia. And the Irish have a disease called respectability. That is, oh, don't wear that. Don't do that. Don't say that. What will they say? Of course, all the time, because we have 800 years of having to put up with a lot of yahoos, upper class yahoos. But the thing about the last days are this. I really, if I have offended or hurt anybody, if I haven't done... You know, in case of doubt, my thing now is do the right thing. In case of doubt, say the right thing. And just be as kind as you can to people and just breathe deeply. Now, I've got a disease called IBM, inclusive body myositis, which is now has inhibited my, I can't walk anymore anywhere. I have to be, you know, use a wheelchair and so on. I have had prostate cancer. I had a brain tumor. I have had 8-9 stents put in my arteries. I found out I have diabetes, and I have I'm a walking human tenement, right? Mm. But the thing is this, that I am enjoying every moment of my life because I've got a loving, amazing spouse, my wife, Diana. I've got 5 terrific children, and I have 8 grandchildren, and I have a host of good friends, and I'm able to, although I might be a walking human tenement, the roof is still on, and I can still write, I can still speak, and here we go. So I am I only have a very limited time. I mean, as I say, if I behave myself till midnight, I'll be okay. I will die healthy. But otherwise, beyond that, I have no. And if you have one foot in the future and one foot in the past, you're urinating on the present. So that's where I am at this moment, in the present, talking to my friend Adrian Flannelly and Anya. And so what more can I ask than that? I can't get anything better in life than what I have right now. I'm breathing and talking and having a good time talking to you, my good friend.
Well, I the feeling is mutual. I do want you to address that. This book is Death Need Not Be Fatal.
Yes.
It might imply that finally... You put the pen down and throw out the inkwell. You can't do that. Writers cannot do that.
No, no.
It just, you know, like, what are you going to have? That need not be fatal, you know, the sequel. I mean, it's what is that about writing? And God knows if I have to say so myself and... you're writing, because we have worked together.
I'm sorry, Eddie, you're fading away.
I said we have worked together for many years, and
you're fading away.
I am fading away?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Very, very thankful.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know what that is, but I just want to tell you that, you know, your writing is, your handwriting is atrocious.
Yes.
Yeah. And that part you will recognize. But who has this job of taking that scribble of yours and trying to decipher what...
My good friend Brian MacDonald. He did the editing on the book and put it all in order. And he's a hell of a good writer himself. So he was able to guide me through that, put the chapters in place and in order. So you need somebody like that, somebody with an orderly mind, which I don't have. So that was my co-author on this book.
It is, it's available, and it's available on Amazon. But I'm really amazed, not amazed, but bookstores who shouldn't, you know, have anything to do with you with a 40-foot pole, they're carrying it as well.
Oh, there we are.
Okay.
The books, I guess, I'm going to be at Shakespeare and Company over on 64th Street in Lexington, I think, on October 10th. There we are. Yeah, I'm all over the place.
Yeah, on October 10th? I can't be at that. I have a funeral that day that's awake and it's clashing, you know, with your time.
It's not mine, is it?
No. Malachy, to say that you're, you know, an iconic humorist doesn't cover the half of it.
Oh, there's one more thing that I wanted to mention, Adrian. The Irish American Writers, we're having our annual thing at Rosie's, and we're honoring Phil Donahue this year. So that's at 6 o'clock at So there we are. So I want you to be my guest, and Anya, will please come.
And that's something because and I don't think anybody has ever gotten past, you know, that organization without getting ripped off at the door. Oh. So I appreciate that.
It's amazing you get. Your admission also gives you membership, whether you like it or not.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm glad that I'm your guest because
you are indeed. And Anya, don't forget Anya.
I haven't done all the research there, but anything that you are very much involved in, I would need to check out twice.
I was the honoree last year myself.
Yeah. So this is payback. Okay.
This is it. Yes, indeed.
All right. You have a number of Limerick listeners who are trying to make either head or tail out of our conversation, including, of course, Kevin O'Connor.
Yes.
Who is so glad that he was on first so he can disown, you know, this entire
segment. By the way, Angela's Ashes has been made into a musical and a play in Limerick and 2 weeks in Dublin and in Belfast there this last month.
Yeah.
So that is another funny thing that's gone on, much to people's consternation.
Yeah. And
I tell you, we're all over the place.
And you have Maeve O'Malley down in New Jersey trying to make excuses for you.
Lovely Maeve. I mean, she says he doesn't mean it. She thinks that I'm a very pious kind of member of the Legion of Mary.
Well, I have to tell you, as long as you don't drag me down with you, I'm quite happy to be.
I couldn't go that low anyway, Adrian. You're already there.
There is something that I feel strongly about, and that I think that many should know. Before Angela's Ashes, the McCourt name and the McCourt reputation had nothing really or very little to do with the brother Frank, and God rest him. But it was, you were that trailblazer, you were the person who was out trying your hand at everything and being successful along the way. And every time you became successful, you decided, this doesn't suit me, and you'd move on and try something else. Isn't that basically true?
I was allergic to being successful.
Yeah.
And there was also something about, there were things like money coming in, and I didn't know what to do about that because I wasn't used to it, you know.
Yeah.
And I you get addicted to poverty and to trouble and to stress and to want and all of that. So,
yeah.
So that was me.
And it's always suited you.
It did. You know, I started off, I couldn't imagine, I'd landed in America, and all of a sudden, for some reason or another, I'm on The Tonight Show with Jack Parr about 20
right.
times. I'm on with Merv Griffin for innumerable times. I'm on everywhere. I got a television show for about 10 minutes,
yeah.
and then I'm on the radio, and I never told them, of course, that I'm not educated. If they'd asked me for my qualifications, I would hand over a blank piece of paper. I'd say nothing. Notin. Nothing.
You're as we reflect on your own career, you know, to have you as whether that was in radio or in television. Or, you know, in the
saloon
arts
business.
Or whatever.
And well, I was a governor candidate, too, in 06.
Yeah.
For the Green Party.
Right. I have never, well, I wasn't very fond of the Green Party to begin with, but I took that off the list, too, like your name.
Yes, I know you did, yeah, because I was, when I sent you the ask you to subscribe to my campaign, I got a blank check.
No, you got an IOU.
But oh, that was it, yes.
But that was blank as well, you know.
Yes, that's right. That was it. That's
Maliki,
what it was.
Yeah. Maliki, I would, again, though, like to, you know, to wrap up this conversation to say that being an icon, being something which you would deny, but actually, come to think of it, you probably wouldn't deny it, would you?
Would I deny what?
That you're an icon and, you know, for writers and for actors.
Well, there's a statue of me outside of St. Patrick's. It's in the gutter there.
Mm. Well, you know, you just happen to be in the pulling down statue.
Yes, that's my brigade.
That's your brigade, so... Take a photograph of it, will you? Like a good.
I will. Nelson's pillow. Off she goes.
Maliki, thank you.
That's the way to deal with statues you don't like.
All right. Up
give them the Nelson treatment.
Yeah, indeed. Maliki, thank you. Thanks for joining
us.
Thank
you, Adrian, as always, and blessings on you and all the family.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Adrian.
And to you, too. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio, Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com, worldwide.